Back to another episode of MedTech Trends. I'm your host, Dorian. So today we have with us Tim Groninger, who is the CEO of Caravan Health. Now, Tim joined Caravan in 2017 as the Senior Vice President for Strategy and Development, and he later became the President in 2018, and of course, he's currently serving as CEO. Now, in these roles, he oversaw the company's delivery and operations, as well as marketing and its strategic growth plan. He's also the former Chief of Staff and Director of Delivery System Reform at CMS, where he led the agency's work on drug spending, significant elements of the agency's implementation of new physician payment system created by the Medicare Access and CHIP Reauthorization Act of 2015, as well as the creation of new payment models. He was also the Senior Advisor for Health Care Policy at the White House Domestic Policy Council, where he was responsible for coordinating administration activities in healthcare delivery system reform. Before joining DPC, he was a senior professional staff member for ranking member Henry Waxman at the House Committee on Energy and Commerce, where he was responsible for drafting and developing elements of the Affordable Care Act. So welcome, Tim. Thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. Glad to have you with us here today.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Awesome. So I really wanted to dive into the affordable or accountable care organization, which is a type of program that was developed by CMS. And Caravan Health is, of course, one of the leading sort of models of the ACO type, if you will. It's had huge successes. It has a long history as well. I can't think of a better person to sort of get into this this model and how it works, what it's all about, than yourself. And I wanted to start off with, coming from a background where you were working at CMS, what was the shift like going from CMS into sort of a more private kind of sector setting? Were there any surprises or consistencies between what you anticipated sort of building the ACO model at CMS versus what it's like bringing on new clients now as end users?
Yeah, it's a great question. And there were, of course, a lot of differences working when you have the resources and reach of the federal government available, not at your disposal, at the public's disposal, but at the reach and ability to touch the healthcare system in such significant ways at CMS, the trillion-dollar agency that nobody's heard of course. The efforts that we went to in partnership across HHS and with the private sector at the time to create new payment models like accountable care organizations that step away and attempt to leap away from fee-for-service payment models, there were a lot of changes for me going to the private sector, and I embraced those, and Caravan was a great fit for me because we had an innovative founder and CEO at that time, and Lynn Barr, who had stitched together this concept of an accountable care organization that is composed of providers who are not owned by one another, who are not in employment relationships with one another, but are working together towards common ends of managing the total costs of care and improving the quality and experience of care that they're providing to their patients. And so for me, it was a difference between creating a favorable environment and allowing business models to be created that can be organized around total costs and total quality, and then actually doing it in partnership with providers all around the country. So it's been an exhilarating process, and one in which I learned something every day.
Now, it's funny you mentioned that, CMS is this trillion-dollar organization that not a lot of people sort of know was really working hard in the background. I almost feel as I was doing my research on ACOs, I would draw almost a parallel in the sense that, ACOs have been around for a long time, at least 10 years, possibly 20 or more. And I think they're also related to the older concept of HMOs, as far as my understanding goes, but at the same time, are people really aware of ACOs working in the background? There's been a huge growth in ACOs. There are hundreds of these, not all are created equal, of course, and we'll get into that. But, is that a pain point, if you will? Is it difficult to get that message across that there's this organization, this ACO model that is working hard to balance, you know, population health, cost savings, and offers a very unique value add in doing so.
Yeah, the growth of ACOs has been much more rapid than I think most people realize, even in the industry. If you want to, managed care is a good comparison. In Medicare managed care in particular, Medicare Advantage under previous names was introduced to the program in 1983. And by the end of the 80s was still under single digits percentage wise in enrollment in the program and beneficiary covered lives. By contrast, the ACO program was introduced to Medicare in earnest in 2012. There were prior pilots and demonstration programs. And by 2020, 2021 now, we have more than 10 million beneficiaries in the primary version of ACO, the Medicare Shared Savings Program, and a couple more million in more experimental, higher risk forms, higher financial risk for providers forms, like the Next Generation ACO program, which, about a third, between a fifth and a third of beneficiaries are in these models right now. So the growth has been rapid. You ask about whether people are aware. I'd say most patients are not aware of what this concept is, and there's maybe some downsides to that. But certainly most providers are aware. And I remember early on in the program talking to physicians and hospital leaders just casually, back when we could talk to people at cocktail parties and not Zoom events. Most of them did not really track this model. It wasn't something that had reached very far. Today, every health system leader is aware of what they are. Many of them have participated in an ACO at this point. Virtually every physician knows what they are. So they have a very large market presence and mind share. And the distinction versus Medicare Advantage, I think, is important to draw out further, because the origins of the ACO program were really an effort to step away from fee-for-service medicine, which, we mentioned this before. Fee-for-service medicine, the incentive to provide more services, procedures, diagnostics, therapies, prescription drugs, because everything is paid for on a per unit or per widget basis. And professionalism has historically been the primary resistance to that. In other words, the idea that physicians acting as professionals, acting on the best interest of the patients, are not going to just purely act in their own profit motive. And certainly in most cases, that's true. But oftentimes on the margins, it's easy to confuse your own financial interests with the patient's best interests, especially when it's, well, what's the harm from doing an additional battery of diagnostic tests, even if they have some portion of them with false positives that will lead, some of which will lead to unnecessary surgeries? Or what's the harm in bringing a patient back for a visit when we really could handle this with a 3-minute phone call? If the financial model is set up in such a way that you're going to get paid for something that's on the margin, then the margin says that you're going to provide the service. And so ACOs are at the core, the really boring answer is ACOs are a contract between providers and the payer. And the contract is trying to flip the incentives on their heads and say, we want you to provide, we the public or we the payer, or we the patients, want you to provide a certain level of quality of care, and the medical standards that we want to continue to have the same access to care, but we also want you to pay attention to costs too. And if you spend as much as we did last year plus an inflation target, then you're gonna if you can beat that benchmark, then we're gonna share in that savings with you as the provider that can be in charge of those outcomes. And so it's a really important remaking of the financial underpinnings of the healthcare system. And that's why I think it's so exciting that the model is spreading as quickly as it is.
Yeah, you touched on a bunch of areas that I wanted to dive into in this conversation. Just for perspective for folks listening too, I mean, we're talking about a program that I think up until 2020 or so, it's resulted in cost savings around $400 million to CMS. So it's a very successful program financially and in practice as well. So we're talking about hundreds of ACOs that have thousands and thousands of members. Caravan, of course, is sort of leading the pack in a lot of ways in the way that it's put together. It's a unique model to do this. And, it's very effective, and it's very reassuring, I think, to hear that a lot of people are aware of it. And at the same time, like we were saying, ACOs are not all created equal. So there is a winning sort of recipe. And let's see if we can dive into that. Maybe I'll frame the question this way. So at its heart, the ACO model allows a network of providers to deliver care in such a way that you ultimately end up focusing on preventive care. And through that approach, there's a cost sharing or a risk sharing sort of approach where you can partner with CMS. And if you do it successfully by the numbers, and so scale becomes extremely important, then you basically earn back a lot of savings while still maintaining high quality care, which is something, again, that Caravan's been very, very successful at doing. Would that be sort of a fair way to put it, what the ACO model essentially is?
It is. And I would, if I may elaborate a little bit on your structure, going back to the financial underpinnings here, the opportunity to share in savings generated by an investment in improvements in prevention or care management or managing certain parts of the patient experience is created by that opportunity to earn shared savings. And so without this different contract structure, doing additional prevention or doing a better job of managing care transitions from the hospital is going to result in potentially better care for the patients. Hopefully, certainly if you're providing more services, you hope that the quality and care experience improves. But there's not any reason to believe that those investments are going to result in improved economic improvements in the healthcare system. They may not. The evidence suggests that you provide these additional services in the context of a fee-for-service model. Costs are going to go up. Patients are going to pay more. Employers and governments are going to pay more, and outcomes are going to be roughly neutral. But if you wrap that in the context of an ACO contract where you're monitoring quality measures and you are monitoring the outcomes you care about, then you can see some of the results you alluded to earlier. And the savings to CMS are actually, the academic studies on this there's the program metrics, which are sort of what CMS paid, what CMS received, but then there's the quasi-randomized methods where you look at how a comparison group of patients and providers would have fared without this model. And there's very good evidence at this point that the program is saving the government a good deal of money, certainly in the billions of dollars per year range. And that can translate to savings for patients as well.
And that's also money that can be reinvested back into the system to create even more programs, in much the same way, I suppose, that you were doing while at CMS. So new payment models, new ways of delivering care. So it's essentially reinvested back into the system. So it seems like a win-win, I think, all around. What if we can get a little bit more into how Caravan itself works, and maybe one of the questions that I was really interested in is, where does the name Caravan come from? And then we'll dive into some of the ways that Caravan thinks about this ACO model.
Yeah, this is deep Caravan lore here. So this was prior to my time at the company, so I'm going off of what I've been told, but this story has been checked out by a couple of different sources and folks who were there. The concept that we were going for with that name choice, originally we were the National Rural ACO Services Organization. And so we had grown out of this sort of unusual ACO concept where 10 rural hospitals from four different states, including Washington, Michigan, Mississippi, Nevada, had joined together to form an ACO together. And CMS looked at that and was surprised to see that application, because the concept we all had was from prior pilot versions of the program. There were organizations like Dartmouth Hitchcock organized around providers in New Hampshire. We all sort of figured, okay, it's physician groups in a region and people that they know come into the model as an ACO. But if you look at the program rules, this concept was allowed, and Caravan predecessor and a few others had done this, and primarily rural providers needed to do it because they were all far too small to form their own, and their near neighbors weren't interested, and so they needed to work across state lines, and they needed to work nationally. So from the beginning, Caravan was organized as what we now call collaborative ACOs, where we have this non-owned, non-employment relationship among the members, and we needed an organization to provide the shared services, provide the training, provide the analytics to support success in the model. And Caravan grew out of that as the services organization and wanted to bring in the concept of making progress together over time. And so Caravan is a way of traveling, of course, is a collaborative effort and is an effort to share work and share resources. And that's where the name Caravan came from.
Caravan also, like you mentioned, has its roots in a rural setting. And by Lynn Barr, I believe, who's also still serving Caravan in as a chairman and or chairwoman. And you know, it's really interesting because I think maybe one of the I won't say criticisms, but one of the points of resistance, if you will, that people have had about the ACO model is that it's very difficult to make it work in a rural setting. And yet Caravan uniquely is sort of built out of the idea of being able to make it work in a rural care setting. And I wanted to ask you a little bit about that. As I understand it, part of the Caravan model, the formula that makes it work is that there has to be scale. And the way to do that is to get a lot of people to participate within the ACO. Does the same sort of thing apply to an ACO in a rural setting as an urban setting, a big city setting?
Yeah, absolutely. And you said in that question a few times that what does it take to make it work? And one of my favorite econometrics professors in grad school said something like 90% of doing the work is doing the work. And by which I think he means of rolling up your sleeves and digging in to just figure things out. And that's what the early Caravan did. That's what we still do. It's actually our logo now. Now the numbers work. We've really built around a business model focus where we go in and help our clients figure out how to make a sustainable business model out of this. Because you're right, it's not easy. Certainly, one of the things that we've discovered over time is that scale is a necessary but not sufficient requirement for success. So you can't be successful in a risk-bearing contract as a 5,000 life ACO. The random variation is going to kill you. The confidence interval on an ACO that size is like 9%, the 95% confidence interval. And you're trying to save 2, 3, 4, 5% per year, right? So if you save 5%, you're doing great work, but the random noise might take you to show you that you're losing by 4%, right? And you might even write a check someday. So there's the need to be in a large enough ACO, but then everyone in that ACO needs to be doing the right investment in prevention and staffing their teams appropriately. They need to be managing their high risk patients effectively. They need to be documenting and coding effectively. So the figuring out the tools to get the work done in a very strained work environment of physician practices where they all almost everywhere you go feel under-resourced and are low on time because we've put a lot on the plate for physicians, especially primary care physicians. They have more demands on their time than they could possibly meet. And that's why we have to spend a lot of time with them, getting their staff straight, getting people to take work off of their plates so that they can use their time most efficiently.
Building on this idea of a collaborative effort that's really necessary to make this make this work. You know, Caravan, I believe, has and maybe the stats are a little bit updated now, but you know, 26,000 plus providers, 600,000 lives covered, and I imagine a lot of that is, you know, providers in competing healthcare systems. And let me know if that's not accurate. But you know, how do you get people to work together? I mean, it's for the common good for sure. But how do you get people to sort of work together and not butt heads to go through this system?
Yeah, we have mostly managed to avoid direct competitors working together, and there's a lot of reasons to prefer that. We mainly around data sharing and the difficulties that you run into if you are in rooms frequently with competitors. But it comes up more the more clients we add, certainly. So it is possible to work with competitors in our model, and we have seen it done successfully. The hard part is that there is just a lot of different actors in any successful model here. There's a need to get system buy-in. There's a need to get clinic buy-in. There's a number of technical factors that you have to work through with IT staff and quality reporting staff and compliance and all of that before you even get to redesigning primary care workflows. So that's really where we've developed our best use cases and our best models. And the proof of concept of that. And it was in 2018 that we started really bringing our client. We had 38 ACOs at the time, and we started collapsing them to larger and larger ACOs because we were saving 3% for the government on average, which should have generated about 1.5% in shared savings payments for our clients. But because of this small ACO problem, many of them were not meeting their minimum thresholds. The minimum threshold goes down the larger you get, and the reliability, the precision of the estimates goes up. So we're now managing with our partners about 12 ACOs in 2020 last year. And since we've created these large national collaboratives, we had a 240,000 life single ACO with 129 health systems in it in 2019, and then similar arrangements in 2020, our clients are going to be receiving $120 million in shared savings payments on the basis of those 2 years, 2019 and projected for 2020, 73% in 2019, 86% in 2020. That's against national averages of about 50%. So the collaborative approach and managing that scale, while all of the participants are doing the work and are accountable to each other and to us, is producing the results that we drew up on a whiteboard in 2018.
I also read from a couple of the news releases. So 2019 was, as you mentioned, a really important year. I think part of the strategy to build out this huge collaborative ACO was to try to approach state level medical organizations. If I read that correctly, so that obviously would help with getting people on board and agreeing and all pointing in the same direction. I wonder if you can speak to that a little bit. How was there a strategy you guys kind of used to approach the medical organization?
We've had a lot of good partnership with state medical associations, state hospital associations, rural health associations, and health offices. Every state has a state office of rural health. And for us, it's a combination of knowledge sharing and networking that's beneficial there. Oftentimes, those are trusted advisors in a state. And so, we've developed a partnership with the Florida Hospital Association, for instance, where we do webinars with them. We stay in touch with them and their membership and trade notes on upcoming CMS initiatives, for instance. We've also had some more formal partnerships and formal relationships, like with the Stratum Med IPA, which is an IPA out of Illinois that has provider partnership clients all over the Pacific Northwest as well. The benefits there can be it can streamline some contracting processes on both sides, but more importantly, we've got a lot of good partners in the room who are able to help us pitch the vision to more providers who can benefit from this work.
I'm really curious, what kind of feedback do you get when you're pitching potential members? Do they, what really grabs your attention? Is it the, it's probably a lot of different things. I'm going to leave that as an open-ended question. What really grabs your attention?
Yeah, it's amazing the variety that you see out in the world, honestly, and how varied the U.S. healthcare system is when you talk to just the job descriptions of people who are put in charge of this work at any given health system or at any given physician's office. It could be the director. Frequently, we'll see someone who's the director or VP for managed care, or who's the chief medical officer could be in charge of this work. We could see someone who's from the contracting world, sometimes a quality improvement leader, the chief nursing officer sometimes get involved. And then, with physician groups and physician practices, there's far less administrative staff available. So you'll usually be talking to whoever the lead partner is, or whoever's leading population health for a particular practice, along with an individual administrative director. We get all sorts of varied responses. There are some people who have zero interest in this, and we don't talk to them because they don't want to talk to us. But some of those people show up a year or two later after they've seen results, or after they've realized that there's some capability that they're missing. The part of the push for this, right, isn't that there's the business model push, and if the government and private payers have done a good job, then there should be a natural pull into this model if it's a good business model, right? And if we're doing a good job. And there's some of that, certainly. There's some direct pressure to join risk-bearing models, and that is driving a lot of the adoption and realization among providers that they need to build certain capabilities that they don't have historically. Just like think about this as a service line that they need to develop and to learn how to use the tools and technology effectively. And then there's a whole bunch. One dynamic you see is there's frequently, especially in systems with complicated decision-making structures, which is almost all healthcare organizations of any size, you see the dynamic where there are champions and detractors, right? And frequently, but not always, it's the chief financial officer who's asking the tough questions, appropriately so. That there's a lot of waste in healthcare, and there's a lot of projects with good ideas that don't have solid financial foundations, right? And so the model needs to be tested, and it needs to generate a return, and that's part of the reasoning behind how we've organized ourselves to be able to help our clients see a return, not just hope for a return with shared savings 2 or 3 years from now, but begin to generate new population health revenues in the near term, to generate new revenues from improvements in their 340B operations, and to take advantage of other payment opportunities that they might not be doing yet.
You know, there's been enough publicity, I guess, enough writing around, not everyone trying to start their own ACO has been successful at doing it. So every ACO is going to vary by, it's going to vary by region. It's going to vary by its demographic of the patient groups, composition of HCPs, and so on. And so there has to be, I guess, an understanding that it can work in some cases, but it has to work in a certain way. And so maybe that has to be, there's like an education piece that has to go along with bringing people on board. And I found that really an interesting statistic, something like 100, at least 100 have not really been all that successful in implementing the ACO model.
Depending on how you look at it, I wouldn't say that an ACO or a provider that goes into an ACO it doesn't generate shared saving the first year, it doesn't make them a failure per se. But if they're not organized around a clinical strategy where they're building their primary care capacity, because the whole model is organized around primary care, I should also note that. If it's not a model that is organized in a way that has shown at this point to have some chance of success, really managing effectively very high cost patients, really going after a post-acute care optimization strategy. There's a couple of other common practices that has a data infrastructure that is going to provide insight into how their patients are doing over time and how their organization is trending. Especially early on, there were plenty of failures of just lack of understanding of how hard the work was going to be. That's probably improved as the industry has adopted some standard best practices, but there's still a lot of variation in how systems approach this work, and a lot of strengths and weaknesses that every system brings, right, that they need to address as they go in, because in most organizations, there's a fair amount of culture change required here, and buy-in both at the administrative level and on the clinical level is really important for success.
Yeah, that's almost a point that I would want to reiterate, that it does require a lot of work. You have to get buy-in from a lot of stakeholders because there's quite a bit of a shift that would have to happen. This is also a nice segue, I think, into some of the things that makes Caravan Health really unique because we've been talking about the concept of an ACO and the fact that this is a very good economic model if you can get the numbers right. But what Caravan Health offers is actually as I understand it, it's a suite of solutions. I mean, there's an entire ecosystem that goes around supporting members to actually join an ACO model. And part of that is the technology, telehealth services. There's also a big education component that you help your members with. There's an analytics platform, and that's just scratching the surface. So I wanted to dive into that a little bit. In terms of like the population health sort of approach, I think a big part of that has to do with it really enabling nurses, nurse practitioners, other healthcare providers to really practice population health, which is part of their training anyways, much more so than they would in a typical sort of fee-for-service type model where everything is really focused on acute care, getting patients out the door, volume, that sort of thing. It's really interesting. And part of that, I believe Caravan really also supports with training programs to actually help HCPs actually get on board with how to use this approach as opposed to going back to the traditional acute care sort of approach. And I wonder if you can speak a little bit to that. The focus on getting nurses to do more of that prevention.
You hit on a lot of important pieces of the model. So thanks for teeing that up. I barely need to add anything. So just to illustrate how we approach the work, we think it's really important for practices and health systems to get organized around the business model, like I mentioned. And for us, that starts with an enhanced primary care model. So we'll go in and do an assessment of their primary care population health capabilities, what sort of staff resources in particular they have, what their IT situation is, and go through that, check off a needs assessment. And generally, we're going to need them to identify nurse care managers or hire new nurses for any primary care practice that has more than three physicians working there. And then we're going to need to go through with them. We're going to need to train that nurse on population health skills, behavioral interviewing, health coaching, managing patients who are not in your office, keeping track of data in new ways, coding opportunities, billing for preventive care. So we put a big emphasis on really effective annual wellness visits to identify any gaps in care that patients are experiencing, to head off likely future incidents for higher risk patients, and to close documentation gaps at the same time, which are really important to identify in an ACO. And that stuff, it requires a fair amount of training and materials and just handholding to get these programs up and running. And as our clients demonstrate capabilities with that, with new ways of offering access to care for their patients, we then help them with the next initiative, right? There's no standing still. There's always ways to improve. And the work starts with primary care, but then reaches to other parts of the health system as well. The tools we will bring will bring technology, and we will work with their EMRs to pull out relevant clinical data to power those insights and workflows I described. We will provide to them tools that will help their nursing staff do their jobs and streamline their time, right? There are a number of barriers to effective care management that we help our clients work through. We offer patient messaging applications if they don't have something that they're happy with through their EMR. We help them keep track of the nurse's time so that they can bill for it appropriately. And then we've been adding ancillary and additional services here as well. Most of our clients are 340B covered entities, which is this obscure part of the Public Health Service Act that allows safety net providers, rural providers, federally qualified health centers to access very large discounts on prescription drug pricing. There are very big gaps in claiming rate relative to eligibility to claim rate. Like 80% of eligible claims don't go claimed. And so we're helping our clients figure that out as well. We try to be a partner and take risk sharing with them as well. So we try to be a partner in all of the important moving pieces here. And that involvement for us is really key to the success of the enterprise.
I definitely wanted to come back to the 340B initiatives that you work with your members about and how, you know, that might evolve going forward. One of the other things that that I saw that Caravan offers is this analytics and reporting and monitoring platform. Some of the data that goes into that is actually collaborative data or pool data from all the members. So again, really kudos for being able to pool everything together and get everyone working together on that. I'm wondering, is that platform, was that built in-house? And is there a unique case study that you can think of that that you might be able to share to sort of show how that kind of data could be leveraged? So you mentioned 340B. I imagine it can help with identifying cost savings there. The annual wellness visits is another important example that could come out of using that analytics platform. Does anything else come to mind?
Yeah. So the data that you're describing comes from Medicare claims or for health payment claims. And it's a very robust and important data set for value-based operations. And historically, and still to this day for non-ACO members, this data isn't available to providers, which has been a long-run problem for the Medicare program. But with the founding of the Medicare Shared Savings Program, CMS did begin allowing ACO participants to access their claims data. And a really robust infrastructure and ecosystem of companies that use that data to identify improvement opportunities has sprung up from that data. It's extremely rich and robust data, and Caravan is one of those companies that uses that data for our work. The data is, as I mentioned, is extremely rich. It is the record of healthcare services and drug therapies received by patients that are served by the ACO looking back 3 years. And it's complete and comprehensive, more or less. So it is the type of information that you might think would be in an EMR, but is not actually in an EMR. Because for a million reasons, it could be that the patient goes to another health system for 2/3 of their care. It could be that the client has two different EMRs that don't talk to each other, and so it lives in two different EMRs, even within the hospital system or the provider group. But the claims data set, if Medicare paid for it, it's in there. And so that is extremely valuable in being able to understand patient experience of care, cost drivers, imbalances in the performance of a group of providers in an ACO relative to others in an ACO, so we can create benchmarks of what does a median practice look like, what does an efficient and inefficient practice look like in terms of inpatient utilization or utilization around particular episodes of care, whether it's experiences of cancer and and oncology bundles or experiences around, classically like knee and hip operations have benefited a lot from standardization around post-surgical and post-acute care. So huge opportunities have been, and insights have been generated from using this data. And early ACOs, and I still actually see a number of prospective clients doing this, would just take the claims and basically put it in an Access database or an Excel database and sort of use some averages, look at the shiny, like, oh, this claim is enormous. What happened with this one patient who cost Medicare $1 million last year? Was that, like, what did that have to do with us? There's a lot of dead ends in that type of work. And so we've distilled, over the years, we've created hundreds, thousands of different reports for us and for our clients, and we've distilled those over time into modules of how a client is doing on key performance indicators in care management and prevention, how they're doing on care episodes that are likely to generate downstream cost implications, what are risk factors that practices should be watching out for patients that are likely to have problems later. So the combination of the data and then the financial structure we talked about earlier, where it's worth it to spend some time on this and to invest upfront in certain avoidable events or certain care episodes, creates this robust new world where you can actually use that in a way that makes sense financially for the health system and for the patient.
You mentioned Caravan's team actually puts together a lot of these reports that can help its members directly. Hypothetically, let's say I'm a member. Can I also look at my own data or look at benchmarks?
Absolutely. Okay. And we aren't the team. We create the reports and we look at the reports, but we've distilled these reports and share them and discuss them. They power our work with our clients, and so clients have access to all of our reports that we have access to. And if they want the raw claims data, they can have it. Some clients have their own in-house analytics teams that use the data for other purposes or for supportive purposes. So yes, we do both.
Really powerful. You know, as somebody coming from a data science background, working with a lot of claims data sets and pharmacy data sets and that sort of thing, I can see the value in doing that. So awesome to hear. Another interesting piece that the Caravan service that Caravan offers is that you've helped a lot of your members actually transition into a virtual care setting. You talked a little bit about the fact that there's been billing code changes, let's call them, especially in 2020, I believe, and that's helped through that transition quite a bit. But you also offer technology platforms. Is that right?
We do. We don't offer a telehealth billing service platform ourselves, but we've helped our clients choose vendors or figure out how to comply with the rules and how to bill for the services on their own technology platforms. We have, at the start of the pandemic, we had a very swift need to help a lot of rural providers get stood up on telehealth and virtual care quickly. And so we turned on a dime and created a whole bunch of new resources, spent a whole lot of time on training webinars and workshops and helped our clients through this. And our clients had a huge amount of creativity on their own, creating, you know, drive-through clinics. And some of our clients that were, you know, really invested in care management work before the pandemic turned it up, multiplied it by five, and were able to reach and touch all of their high-risk patients, keep them out of the emergency room during that process. And it was all through use of remote technologies and quick understanding of the new flexibilities that were allowed during the pandemic through partly through work with us.
Really an important part of this suite for anybody looking to transition into an ACO model, because not only was there a decrease in visits, just very broadly speaking, but at the same time, there's longer term implications, because if patients are not going in for appointments that they need, not getting the care that they need as regularly as they would have had the pandemic not happened, that has long-term implications for their own health outcomes as well. So helping organizations and healthcare providers transition into a system and a program that actually made sense for them with a virtual care component, that I'm sure would have helped tremendously. So I'd love to learn a little bit more about that as well. So Tim, I know we're running out of time. I wanted to ask you, you know, if going forward, if we look into the next couple of years, what are some of the things that Caravan is planning for in terms of expanding or working more closely with its current members? I know there's some work going on with the CHART program. So CHART stands for Community Health Access and Rural Transformation Model. That's some additional funding to help rural or smaller ACOs get up and running. And then there's also some work, I believe, going on with the 340B related savings and how you guys can further leverage your expertise to help members go through that.
Yeah. So you're exactly right on the CHART model. It is a new version and an updated version of the Innovation Center model from 2016, the ACO investment model, where we and others brought a number of rural providers into the ACO program, to the Medicare Shared Savings Program. We had about 50% of the ACOs in that model working with us. The program saved Medicare $382 million over the first 3 years. And the new CHART model is is similar in construction in that CMS is going to offer loan funding, forgivable loans to providers who join an ACO. And the terms of the forgivable loan are a little bit unusual in that if you stay in the program for the entire five-year time and you never generate shared savings, then the loan's forgiven. Of course, that's not a great outcome for anyone, but the access to the loans can defray the upfront costs and cash needs of joining these programs. If you generate shared savings in the program, then you repay the loan to CMS. And so we are expecting to be recruiting. We're actually doing a webinar on this, I want to say the 4th next week, and we're going to be going into great detail if anyone wants to join, caravanhealth.com. We are going to be accepting letters of intent to join the program with us until the end of March. But it's a great opportunity for rural providers to get some help from CMS in joining at a very low or no cost for the first few years. And you're also right, we're really excited about new work that we're doing with our provider clients in the 340B program. This is a program for safety net providers, for DSH hospitals, for federally qualified health clinics and rural providers. And the program in general, it has most providers are not accessing most of what they're entitled to under the law. And we are able to help them both document and manage the patients that are using these prescriptions and help them implement programs where they are continuing. Many of the most expensive patients involved here are also not being managed well in their handoff to specialists. And so the combination of the ACO workflows of putting in place better management of coordination between different specialists in the healthcare system, transitions of care, along with the insights around where they're missing those, the opportunities to claim those, is a really big opportunity for most 340B covered entities. And so we're very excited to help our clients with that now too.
Awesome. I'm definitely looking forward to hearing more about that. And also other interesting things that are happening with Caravan Health and supporting its current members. So Tim, thanks so much for joining us today. Really had an interesting time hearing a lot more about the ACO model, and hopefully we can get the word out on how a lot of healthcare providers can actually benefit from this model, and also how a lot of patients can benefit from it, because ultimately this is a program that's aimed to help population health as well as generate shared savings. So really interesting to hear about this. I loved our conversation, and we look forward to hearing a lot more about Caravan and ACO going forward.
It's great talking to you, Doran. I really enjoyed it. Thank you.
Thanks so much. All the best.